And it's easy to say that I wasn't in harm's way directly, not the same as infantrymen were, but that really took a toll on me physically and mentally. Because of my role, I was giving my advice, my proposals on what should be done, and oftentimes the conclusions that I reached directly led to American soldiers being sent into harm's way and led to direct conflicts between, our boys and the enemy. And in many cases, both Americans and Iraqis and insurgents died. And that was really hard. And I know that on at least more than one occasion that really my decisions were directly responsible for people's deaths. And while I was safe sitting at the computer, I really went through my own troubles. I dealt with periods of depression. I was incredibly sick. In 9 weeks, I lost 50 pounds, and I worked 12 hours a day, every day.
I want to say that I really don't think that you can blame yourself for your decisions. I mean, I hope that you don't blame yourself for the stuff that happened. I mean, it was the situation where you were.
I think that everybody in the military and in this country needs to take a really hard look at their responsibility. The war started with the American people, and it went all the way down to the infantrymen breaking down doors and into people's houses. And at every step of the way, decisions were made and choices were made. And we all share some responsibility for everything that happened. And to say that we don't is just naive.
Do you feel like there's kind of a culture around not talking about the experiences that soldiers have had in places like Iraq and Afghanistan in, in an emotional way, and talking about your feelings and kind of the difficult emotions that you've had to go through, being there and coming back?
Well, the truth is, I don't know that anybody really wants to hear about that.
You really don't think so?
It's so hard to say, but I think the hardest part about opening up and about talking about my experience is that people always have the follow-up question, and people are always going to judge you based on what you say. If you tell some horror story, people are going to have to incorporate that into their image of who you are personally and reconcile that fact. That's so hard to watch somebody process. It's almost insulting when you tell somebody about some horrible hardship or difficulty you went through, and they're in disbelief, or they want to deny it, or they just don't want to understand it. That's so hard to live with.
So you've talked a bit about coming back with your own issues and your own depression. I mean, and there, this is obviously very serious, but there are also a lot of people whose depression kind of overwhelms them after they come back, or even while they're still, overseas. I mean, do you feel like people are, number one, paying attention to that at all? And do you feel like there's kind of a culture that's really discouraging us from talking about, suicides in the military and depression?
I wonder what it was like when the vets came back from World War II. You don't hear people talk about depression or about suicide after that war. And yet I'm sure that those men had really difficult mental problems to deal with. So I think the culture must be different now. Certainly we can talk more about depression and suicide than we could then. But at the same time, I don't think anybody wants to talk about depression or suicide. I mean, for anybody, nobody wants to talk to a friend and find out they're depressed or thinking about killing themselves. And we hope that nobody in our lives feels that way. I had a friend when I was in Iraq. His name was Specialist Roy Mason. And he, while I worked in the intelligence section, he worked in the administrative section. And he had been in a deployment prior to that as an infantryman. And he was a really good guy. And we came back from Iraq, and I didn't see him so much anymore. we weren't all in each other's faces every day like we were when we were deployed. But I did run into him from time to time, and I would talk to him, and I knew he wasn't doing that well. He'd been moved out of his work environment and into another area, which is never a good sign. He'd been demoted. He was a private now, which is usually because, from my experience, of drinking problems or drug problems, or because he hadn't been fulfilling his responsibilities, showing up to work on time, and things like that. And I saw him, and I knew he must not have been doing that well. And he wasn't. Sometime later, he left. He went AWOL. He got in his car, and he drove to California, where he was from. He made it all the way to the coast. He pulled up to a scenic overlook, and he shot himself. And we really let him down. And when word came back to our unit that that had happened, that he died, it went through as a rumor. I never even knew until recently that he really, for sure, had died. There was no big speech. There was no memorial. There was no official note. We just talked about it for a few days, and he was gone. And we let him down. Everybody let him down. The Army let him down. The American people let him down. But we let him down. We were his friends. And I let him down. I knew that he was having a hard time, and I didn't do anything. I didn't ask him how he was. It is a tragedy. He wasn't a war hero. He wasn't going to get the Medal of Honor. But he deserves so much more. And that's a conversation we're not having.
So you came back, and then you actually came back so you can come to school here at the U of I. What was it like kind of transitioning into being a student at a university after that?
Well, getting out of the Army itself was hard enough, and just getting back into civilian life. And, of course, I wasn't going into a job or a professional career. I was coming back to school. And even worse, I was a college freshman. So I registered, and I came to my first class in August. And I remember vividly, it was 8 a.m., Chemistry 101. And it was in this gigantic auditorium that seated hundreds of people. And I, of course, fresh out of the Army, I got there 15 minutes early, because in the Army, you're 15 minutes for everything. And that means you're late. And I was the only person sitting in the entire auditorium. It was just me in the middle in a totally empty room. And all of a sudden, 5 minutes before the bell rings, the floodgates open and hundreds of college freshmen pour in through the doors. And they're all tired and groggy. They're in their pajamas. And they just washed in around me and filled in all the seats. And I'll never forget it. It was a shocking experience. I had worked with men and women, by every definition of the word, for years. And all of a sudden, I was in a room full of children. And I was expected to treat them like my peers and to do the same work that they did and experience the same lack of responsibility as they were expected to have.
I mean, do you feel like you maybe had a better experience going back to school having gone through something like that? Because, I mean, coming into that with, like, no responsibility, it's really easy to get lost and lose sight of what's important. But I feel like if someone's had the experiences that you've had and then they come back, it's hard not to feel like, yeah, I've got to, you know, really prioritize and really take seriously the stuff that matters.
Absolutely. I was married. I had a son. There's no way that I could just fool around or go to parties or not study, not take it seriously. I started college because I needed to finish. I needed to graduate so that I could get a good job, I could get a good career, because I had a family to take care of.
And how are things right now? I know that you have a son. You have a second son also now?
That's right. My boys are 2 and 3, which means that my second son was born in the fall semester of my sophomore year of college.
So you... So that, I mean, it really sounds like you are doing nothing to ever make your life easy. I'd love to have you back sometime if you'd like to come back.
I would love to come back.
Absolutely. We could talk about something a little more upbeat, maybe.
Well, unfortunately, some of the most important things to talk about.
They really, but this is what we should be talking about. Eric, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
That's Eric Swenson. He now lives in Paxton and actually is a listener to WYLL. He and I had a really good talk this morning, and I'll be posting a longer version of our interview on our website, wyll.illinois.edu. So check that out later today.
WILL programming is made possible by Country Financial Representative Scott Jackson, Village at the Crossing in Champaign, helping provide retirement solutions for U of I faculty, staff, and employees for over 20 years. Country Financial can provide a wide range of products and services for immediate insurance needs to retirement goals. Online at scottjacksonfinancial.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 19th of March, 2013. 1842, on this day, a play by Balzac opened at the Odeon Theater in Paris, La Ressource de Quinola, the story of an inventor during the Spanish Inquisition. Balzac was a prolific writer, drank 50 cups of coffee each day, which he said was like sparks shooting all the way up to the brain. To promote his play, he tried a publicity stunt. He started a rumor that tickets were completely sold out, assuming then that people would turn out to see what all the excitement was about. Instead, people assumed they couldn't get tickets, and nobody came. It's the birthday of Philip Roth, born in Newark, 1933, his parents both children of Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe. Majored in English, taught English, went off to Chicago, to the University of Chicago, became friends with Saul Bellow. And when he was 26 years old, he published his first book, a novella and short stories entitled Goodbye Columbus, and it made his reputation and won the National Book Award. And then 10 years later, 1969, he published Portnoy's Complaint, a monologue delivered by Alexander Portnoy to his analyst. It got rave reviews. It was controversial because of the sexual content, and it was the best-selling book of 1969. It's the birthday of